real and useful purpose, but have now become cut adrift from the things and the people they relate to. They might have come from anywhere. They might have come from other worlds. That scribbled-on map, that publisher's catalogue, they might have been put down absent-mindedly in another universe and been blown by a chance wind through an open window to find themselves after many adventures on a market stall in our world. All these tattered old bits and pieces have a history and a meaning. A group of them together can seem like the traces left by an ionizing particle in a bubble chamber. They draw the line of a path taken by something too mysterious to see. That path is a story, of course. What scientists do when they look at the line of bubbles on the screen is work out the story of the particle that made them, what sort of particle it must have been, and what caused it to move in that way, and how long it was likely to continue. Dr. Mary Malone would have been familiar with that sort of story in the course of her search for dark matter. But it might not have occurred to her, for example, when she sent a postcard to an old friend shortly after arriving in Oxford for the first time, that that card itself would trace part of a story that hadn't yet happened when she wrote it. Perhaps some particles move backwards in time. Perhaps the future affects the past in some way we don't understand. Or perhaps the universe is simply more aware than we are. There are many things we haven't yet learned how to read. The story in this audiobook is partly about that very process. Lyra and the Birds. Lyra didn't often climb out of her bedroom window these days. She had a better way onto the roof of Jordan College. The porter had given her a key that let her onto the roof of the lodge tower. He'd let her have it because he was too old to climb the steps and check the stonework and the lead, as was his duty 4 times a year. So she made a full report to him, and he passed it to the bursar, and in exchange she was able to get out onto the roof whenever she wanted. When she lay down on the lead, she was invisible from everywhere except the sky. A little parapet ran all the way around the square roof, and Pantalaimon often draped his pine marten form over the mock battlements on the corner facing south, and dozed while Lyra sat below with her back against the sun-drenched stone, studying the books she'd brought up with her. Sometimes they'd stop and watch the storks that nested on St. Michael's Tower just across Tell Street. Lyra had a plan to tempt them over to Jordan, and she'd even dragged several planks of wood up to the roof and laboriously nailed them together to make a platform, just as they'd done at St. Michael's. But it hadn't worked. The storks were loyal to St. Michael's, and that was that.
"They wouldn't stay for long if we kept on coming here anyway," said Pantalaimon.
"We could tame them. I bet we could. What do they eat?"
"Fish,"
he guessed.
"Frogs."
He was lying on top of the stone parapet, lazily grooming his red-gold fur. Lyra stood up to lean on the stone beside him, her limbs full of warmth, and gazed out towards the southeast, where a dusty dark green line of trees rose above the spires and rooftops in the early evening air. She was waiting for the starlings. That year an extraordinary number of them had come to roost in the botanic garden, and every evening they would rise out of the trees like smoke, and swirl and swoop and dart through the skies above the city in their thousands.
"Millions,"
Pan said.
"Maybe. Easily. I don't know who could ever count them. There they are."
They didn't seem like individual birds or even individual dots of black against the blue. It was the flock itself that was the individual. It was like a single piece of cloth, cut in a very complicated way that let it swing through itself and double over and stretch and fold in 3 dimensions without ever tangling, turning itself inside out and elegantly waving and crossing through and falling and rising and falling again.
"If it was saying something..."
"Like signalling."
"No one would know, though. No one could ever understand what it meant."
"Maybe it means nothing. It just is."
"Everything means something. We just have to find out how to read it."
Pantalaimon leapt across a gap in the parapet to the stone in the corner and stood on his hind legs, balancing with his tail and gazing more intently at the vast swirling flock over the far side of the city.
"What does that mean, then?"
She knew exactly what he was referring to. She was watching it too. Something was jarring or snagging at the smoke.